See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us!
They're coming. Get you, Barbara.
We've got a death curse!
There was a shark.
Little pig, let's come in.
Mad sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
Welcome to the CineScare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And this week we don't have anybody. It's just two boring guys this week, Joe. It's
just two boring guys with no personality celebrating each other's strengths.
That's right. Yeah, it's just us, and we've got a lot of elbow room today.
Yeah, a lot of vacancies. Yeah.
And just so everybody knows, we are actually every summer, if you followed our show, every summer, we take sort of a hiatus. It's a hiatus for us, but you'll still receive episodes every 2 weeks as normal. We front load a bunch of recordings and usually a couple interviews or whatever. And then we're going to be recording a few episodes, like four episodes in the next week. And then that way you guys will be tied over until we'll come back and record a new episode again in August. But
thing you'll notice is we may not be quick to respond on the forums.
Right.
Or the Facebook groups.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's like seamless for you guys.
Exactly.
We're not going to let you down.
And really, we don't respond very quickly on the forums as it is right now. So it's fine. It's totally fine.
We don't like to pull punches here.
No.
So we just will pull back the whole curtain.
Yeah. But there, you know, just for your reference, I guess we'll have to figure this out when we record and we figure out which episode is going to be in July. We'll have to let you know that we are going to skip 1 week for the first time ever. Not a whole episode. We're skipping we have an episode that's, if we did our normal timeline, there's an episode that would go on July 4th, which would be a terrible time to release an episode. Nobody's going to listen to a podcast on the 4th of July. So we're actually going to extend it one more week. So there'll be instead of a 2 week break or a 2 week gap between episodes, there'll be a 3 week. And the other side effect of this, Joe, I don't know if you're aware of this, but the other side effect of this is that makes it perfect because there's five Fridays in the month of October this year. All right.
Yes.
And Halloween is on a Friday this year, which means that we can have three episodes in the month of October.
Yes. One of which will be on Halloween.
Released on Halloween.
Now, see, most people would throw in like an extra episode so we'd get on track. We're going to just drag our feet because we've been doing this for 5 years and we've deserved it. So,
right. And also the 3rd of October, an episode will come out, and that would be perfect because it'll be our 5 year anniversary. So we've got big plans for that one.
Put in a round of applause for that one.
Oh, yeah. Well, here we go.
We only had one.
Yeah. And not the smattering of applause. This is the big full-on. It's dying down, but we're waving it back.
I'm almost embarrassed.
More.
No. It's all right.
Shucks.
Go on. We haven't hit 5 years yet.
Yeah.
So just save some for the anniversary.
Yeah. Save a little bit. But we do have big plans for that one. Hopefully we'll have some big plans for that one. Joe, what have you watched recently? I've heard through the grapevine that Joe Jans has watched a lot of movies in the last 2 weeks, or at least you've watched a couple of good big ones.
They came out with some stuff and I watched some stuff. And first, the one that I can't wait to talk about is I watched the new Owen Wilson smash hit about a a young golfer prodigy that called Stick. That's on. I'm just kidding. I didn't watch that. That looks terrible. But that's what popped up on my IMDb. I didn't even know trailer. There. Oh, it's loading again right now. From the people that brought you Ted Lasso. Here's Owen Wilson, who finds this young kid who's going to be a tremendous golfer.
Is it a series or a movie?
No, it's a movie. And oh, it's wow. now streaming. It's called Stick.
Oh, interesting.
I'd rather get beaten by that than have to watch that thing.
That's true.
No, in all honesty, I did watch a bunch of stuff. The first thing that I watched was Fear Street Prom Queen.
Good.
It was wonderful. It was refreshingly wonderful. Yeah. It's a good old fashioned high school prom slasher film.
Hmm.
And it does not disappoint. The gore is there. The gore is there in spades.
That's good.
Great kills. There's one of my personal favorites involves an angle grinder. And angle if you grinder. Remember, oh yeah. If you remember the trilogy of Fear Streets that came out a couple of years ago, there was one that involved some sort of like meat slicer in a deli, I believe.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. This one far better.
Oh.
So this, I like
those. The first two of those, the third one, I didn't care for much.
I didn't either.
But the first two, I think the first one was 1994, maybe. And the second one was 1980.
70s?
Or 1970. Yeah, 70. I don't know. I don't remember now. Yeah.
Anyway, I agree. The first two were good. The third one was set like in 1886. I wasn't a big fan of it. But this one is by far... my favorite of all of them, I think, and it's definitely worth the watch. So,
it was Fear Street 1994, 1978, and 1666.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, the third one wasn't very good. The first two, great.
No. Though. Oh, yeah. So, I highly recommend this one. This one just came out on Netflix a couple weeks ago. It's still on there. You should go check it out.
Yeah.
Then on Shudder, I watched another Shudder original called The Surrender.
Hmm.
Have you watched this one yet?
No.
When the family patriarch dies, a grieving mother and daughter risk their lives to perform a brutal resurrection ritual to try to bring him back from the dead. Creepy as all get out. Mm. Very unsettling. Very well acted. Actually, one of the girl that plays the daughter is, her name's Colby Minifee.
Mm.
Anyway, she was also on The Boys. If you've been watching that show at all, but tremendously well acted. It's very creepy. Very unsettling. There's some, I don't know. I'm just a big glutton for gore and blood. There wasn't much of that, but it still was enough to hold my interest because it's a lot of, I don't want to see even jump scares, but it makes you feel really uneasy throughout the entire episode. So, or the entire movie. So, still worth a watch, especially if you have Shudder. What else are you going to watch? You might as well. Then I went to the movie theaters and saw myself my favorite movie so far of the year. I dare somebody to knock it off the block. And that, of course, is Final Destination Bloodlines.
Hmm.
The gore was tremendous. I loved it. They did a wonderful job of the same old trope, but they blew the dust off of it and they made it seem fresh and new again. The kills are very creative. There's even, and I'm not spoiling anything, there's even a little callback to the truck with the logs that we know from, I think that was episode 2, maybe it was 3, not sure. I celebrate this entire catalog. And I highly recommend people go see this and go see it in the theater. It's well worth the price of admission. There's fire, there's blood, there's gore, there's an MRI machine that comes into play with this stuff. Like I said, everything very creatively well done. And then last but not least, I saw Bring Her Back in the theaters. Did you get a chance to see this one?
No.
This is just disturbing as all get out. The acting is fantastic. It's about these two children, brother and sister. The sister is mostly blind. And the older brother, he's 17, about to turn 18. He's taking care of his sister because their father just died. He died in the shower. And they get taken to a temporary foster home. And the mother, I guess, a mother figure that's taking care of them, a lovely woman by the name of Sally Hawkins, she's nuts. She's got another child that she's fostering named Oliver, who's a little off center. I don't want to give too much away. There is some very, very disgusting, disturbing sections of this film. It will take you about 45 minutes for it to start ramping up and making sense. But when it does, it goes full throttle. This Oliver kid, there's some scenes where he's like freaking out and he's eating things in the house that are not meant to be eaten.
Mm.
And let's just say they don't agree well with his teeth.
Ugh.
And it's just so disgusting and unnerving. I absolutely loved it. It's probably my second favorite film of the year.
Mm.
But again, this is, I don't necessarily know that you have to go run out and see this in a theater. I think it would have the same emotional impact if you watched it at home. But if you're impatient, then yeah, go see it. It's still well worth the price of admission. It was a fantastic watch.
Hmm.
So that's that takes care of everything I watched in the past 2 weeks.
Excellent. The only thing I have not been able to get back into going out and seeing movies because I've just been super busy. I'm working on my master's and it's been crazy the last month or so. But we did rent Until Dawn.
Have you
seen that?
I have not yet. I'm waiting for the rental to go down from.
I thought somebody, or maybe Mark. I think Mark, when he was on, might have, or no, I think when Mark was on, he mentioned that it was coming out or something like that, I think. But anyway.
Well, Leanne from last episode.
Oh, she talked about
early,
it?
I believe so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. My memory is terrible now.
Movie was something else. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Have we started recording yet?
Don't scare me like that, Joe. Because that's actually happened. We've gotten like 40 minutes in, and I didn't press record. Anyway, so yes, Until Dawn, 2025. It is directed by David F. Sandberg, who also directed Shazam and Annabelle Creation. But he got his start from the Lights Out short, that short Lights Out that we watched a couple months ago. That's where he got his start.
So
his whole career is, you know, was sprang from that little, you know, 3-minute short that he did that was so simple but completely creepy as hell. Anyway, he directed this, and so this is about 1 year after her sister Melanie mysteriously disappeared. Clover and her friends head into the remote valley where she vanished in search of answers. Exploring an abandoned visitor center, they find themselves stalked by a masked killer and horrifically murdered one by one, only to wake up and find themselves back at the beginning of the same evening. So it's a combination of a lot of things that it reminds me of a lot of stuff. It reminds me, obviously, of Groundhog's Day or, you know, Happy Death Day kind of thing, because, you know, it's a time loop sort of situation. But it's not really a time loop. It's more of almost like, I don't even know what you'd call it, like a punishment kind of thing where they keep having to relive the night over again. But they don't get killed by the same killer. They get killed by different killers every night. So in some new way, they all get killed. But they have hope that, you know, they can get out of it. And so this stars really nobody that you've ever heard of except for the bad guy who is what's his name? No, that's not the right guy. The bad guy in it you will have, you know. Peter Stormare, who was the blonde kidnapper in Fargo. He was the guy that doesn't really talk, and he was partners with Steve Buscemi. Anyway, so he plays, I guess, kind of the bad guy in it. But this was fun. This was a lot of fun. It reminds me of, obviously, Happy Death Day with the kind of time loop, although it's not exactly a time loop. It's more that they make them die a different way every night. And so they get killed, and they come back to life, but they are sort of injured by what happened to them. So if you get stabbed in the heart, it, you know, you're back to life, but there's like a kind of a scar there. Or if you get bashed in the head, there's a little scar, whatever. Yeah. And so you see the effects of what's been happening to them emotionally and physically. But it also reminded me a little bit of Cabin in the Woods, in some ways, not overtly, and certainly it's not the same story, but there's a quality to it, reminds me of that. And then also Evil Dead, the newest, you know, Evil Dead, the one that rebooted it or whatever. That one, it's not so much the story or the gore or any of that stuff. It's more there's a few shots that just reminded me of that movie a lot. So it definitely has its influences in its look and its feel. But I gave it 3.5 cuts. It's definitely worth checking out. We rented it on Amazon. It's a $20 rental now. So, you know, it's nothing that you couldn't wait for it to go down in price, though. Get down under $10 and it would be perfect, I think, unless you're just dying to see it. But definitely worth checking out.
You know, it's based on a video game, right?
Yes, I heard that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All yeah. Right. So if you're familiar with the video game, then obviously all this is not going to be news to you. But I never played the
video
game.
But it's still entertaining, Matt.
It is very entertaining. So
yeah.
Definitely check it out. And and what did I say about that? No, I guess that's it. So I guess that brings us to our pick of the week, which is 70s horror. And Joe, when you think of the 70s, Matt, what do you think of?
Sesame Street.
Sesame Street.
Rogers Neighborhood.
All right.
Saturday morning cartoons.
Any TV
show? Man.
Any movies you think of?
Airplane.
TV shows.
Three's Company.
Well, I was really hoping.
Fish.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say this. This is more early 70s, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. 70s. You know who wrote this?
Who?
Quincy Jones.
Oh, yeah, I did know that. Yeah, yeah. This is my favorite part coming up. So yeah, that's what we're doing. A little excellent 70s horror time. Joe, so
now can you play the theme from Welcome Back, Cotter?
I should have that on there. Yeah. I was hoping you would say Sanford and Son, and then I'd just click it and it would be like perfect. So I was taking a big risk there. I could have lined up a whole bunch of 70s TV shows, like the theme songs, and then just one of them had paid. Yeah.
I would have been so impressed if you had had the theme from Three's Company like locked and ready to go.
That would have been, but damn it. It didn't happen. So, Joe, let's go back to go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say maybe we could work something out for the 5-year anniversary show.
Yeah, that's true. We could.
Maybe we could like actually rehearse it or have a script or something.
That's true. So, Joe, let's go back to 1973. Now, I was a youngster. I was very young in 1973. Actually, let's not go back that far because I was too young.
I was 14 days old.
Yeah, no, I was very, very young at that time. But so I did not watch this movie at that time. But let's kick it up a few more years, maybe 5 years, 1978, 79, somewhere in there. And back then there was a TV show out of Channel 44 in Chicago called The Monster Rally Movie. And it had a host sort of like the Svengoolie kind of the archetype or whatever. And this first movie we're going to talk about was one that impacted little 8-9-year-old Matthew Speak in a big way. And I wondered, I had not seen it since then. Probably I hadn't seen this movie since 1978, 79, whenever that.
Can't imagine why.
Well, I'll tell you why.
Although, because it wasn't available?
It's not been available. Yeah, there was a TV version of it available, but even that was not available anywhere that you could find, even on YouTube. And I happened to be talking to a guy who worked as somebody who, I can't remember the name of the term, but they would look for old movies to restore. And usually they're B movies like this. They don't, you know, it's not like they're taking The Godfather and restoring it. They're restoring these old B movies that played on these Fanguli kinds of shows, these old, cheap, low budget. And they do this process on them and turn them into 4K Blu-rays. And they look way better than these movies have any right to look. Unfortunately, I did not
way
buy
better
that.
Than they deserve.
I was not going to spend $35 on a Blu-ray from Vinegar Syndrome. So anyway, I told this guy, I said, you know, there was a show a movie that I watched a couple times as a kid, and it scared the shit out of me when I was really young, and it was called The Severed Arm. And he said, oh, look it up. It's not somebody I kept in touch with. A couple years later, this was like in 2018. By 2020, they released it. So they're always, if you get a chance, to even send them an email. They're always looking for these old movies that nobody's heard of to restore and give them just this beautiful, I mean, there's like a beautiful, looks like kind of like a special features and everything. It's insane. So that's the first movie is The Severed Arm from 1973, Trapped in a Cave. This is
Don't you feel a little bad that you didn't buy one?
35. Well,
you know, you sent an email to this guy saying, hey, do The Severed Arm. And yeah, a couple of years, you know, he's probably been
waiting for me to buy one
and getting this thing done just for Matt. And then he goes ahead and makes one. And he's probably sitting there watching the computer sales roll over. And they're like, nope,
not Matt yet. Matt, I don't see Matt yet. Yeah. Well, that's true. Maybe I should. I just can't bring myself to. And now after I've watched it again, I don't know if I want to spend $35 on this, but
let alone have to watch it a third time.
I know. But I've always thought, well, we'll get to that. So trapped in a cave, five men cut the arm off of another companion in order to ward off starvation. After they are saved, the victim seeks revenge on them one by one. So this is directed by Tom Alderman. I forgot to tell you, Joe, there's actually another reason that I played the theme song to Sanford and Son, and that'll come up in one of the other movies. But so this is directed by Tom Alderman. It is starring Deborah Wally. She was amazing in it. Paul Carr as Sergeant Mark Richards. These are Marvin Kaplan, Madman Herman. He was hilarious, the DJ.
He was my favorite.
Is this movie glacially paced? Yes. It is paced in this. It's so slow. Oh my goodness. It's so slow. But there are images that have been seared into my mind all these years that seeing them again, I was like, yep, that's the image I've thought of all these years. The scene where the guy is walking, I think he's heading up the stairs and he hears something behind him and he turns around and he just sees like some shoes standing in the shadows or whatever. That scene scared me when I was a little kid, but it didn't scare me now. I did not get scared by this. But Joe, what are your thoughts on The Severed Arm? I'm waiting with bated breath to hear what you thought of this one.
So first, I was shocked because we start off with an arm getting delivered through the post office.
Right. Yeah.
Like I didn't realize you could just lop off someone's arm, wrap it up in some postal paper and throw a stamp on it. Yeah. And they're going to deliver it for you.
Yeah.
Astounding.
Yeah. I back then the post office went out on a limb.
Yeah. Oh, that was
bad.
I'm actually proud of you for having the guts to say that.
Yeah. Thank you.
These people forged ahead. Nothing got in their way of making them, you know, allowing or preventing them from making this movie.
Yeah.
Even the 90 mile an hour winds when the postal carrier guy is walking up with the, and his hair is so blowing straight up. He looked like it was Ed Grimley delivering this severed arm.
Yeah.
I do want to, this isn't like Joe's rant, but this is just a pet peeve of mine that I have with, I guess, Hollywood in general. Phone etiquette. you know, like the guy, you're showing a picture of this guy talking on a telephone to somebody, and the postman's here to, you know, deliver your severed arm. He says nothing to the person on the other end of the phone. He just puts the handset down on the table.
I didn't notice.
Not that. Like, hang on, give me a second. There's somebody at the door. And then,
my arm arrived. Back,
yeah. You know, it must be arm delivery.
Yep.
And so he comes up and he picks up the phone again and he starts talking. And then when he realized that was a severed arm, he just hangs up the phone.
Yeah.
And not like, I gotta go, or there's an emergency, or, oh my God, it's a severed arm. Just click.
That happens a lot where somebody's on the phone and they don't say goodbye and they just hang up.
Yeah, it drives me nuts. Say hello when you pick it up, say goodbye before you hang it up.
I rewatched Mad Men recently, and the whole series, I rewatched it. And I noticed that on that show, most of the time when somebody hangs up, they don't say goodbye. They just hang up. Almost every time somebody hangs up.
I was starting to believe that this was just like a Hollywood West Coast thing. Like, those people just never say goodbye when they hang up the phone.
I say goodbye.
Because that's how I grew up watching it on TV. It was, nobody ever did that. But when I grew up, you said you had phone etiquette.
Yeah.
You had to get classes and certified before you could even answer a phone.
Yeah.
It was a joke.
Yeah.
Anyway, to go back to the movie. I can't believe that these guys were in this cave for 14 days because, I mean, they were all clean shaven except for mustaches when they came in, and they all looked like Grizzly Adams when they left.
Yeah, it did seem like, I put that note down too. Their beards grew really long, really quickly.
Like, if
they were, they were in there, 2 weeks?
14 days, yeah.
14 days, yeah, yeah. So, if
somebody hadn't said that,
And
if somebody hadn't said that, if they didn't put the beards on them, I would have sworn it was like maybe an hour had gone by and someone was getting hungry and they're like, we should just kill somebody so we can eat them.
Yeah.
I'm a little peckish right now. Like, hey, guys, the other thing that bothered me is they're down there with all these pickaxes and shovels.
Yeah.
And they went down like a shaft,
and I wish I downloaded the shaft theme now.
Shaft would have been good.
Yeah. God damn it.
But nobody really even seemed to put any sort of effort in to using those picks and shovels to maybe try to dig their way back out.
Yeah.
It's like they were just kind of okay with it. Like they hated their wives or something. They wanted to get some alone time.
Yeah.
But, inevitably these guys triumph. Oh, that was the other thing. Part of the tools that they brought down there, some giant Bowie knife, and they also were able to make fire. So they had matches or something along those lines.
Yeah.
My other
without smoking themselves out.
Right. Of course. Yes. But when they cut that guy's arm off so they could start eating it, which, I mean, you could see this a mile away. They're going to cut that guy's arm off. And 2 minutes later, they're all going to get rescued.
Yeah.
Oh, should have waited. But anyway, the guy died eventually from those wounds, but they could have helped him along had they just cauterized the wound.
Yeah. Right. They had fire.
They had fire. They had plenty of metal. He died in the hospital later, didn't he?
No, he was sitting there at the end in his wheelchair.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. He was a vegetable. I mean, he was, you know,
he was a vegetable, right?
Yeah. He was in vegetative state.
I'm not a doctor. I can't say that if they cauterized the wound that he would have been fine, but I would have thought that would have been a courtesy since you've got the stuff there.
Yeah.
Then he doesn't bleed out.
Joe, if you're going to eat my arm, cauterize the wound, please. All right. That's the least you can do.
Done and done. Yeah. You don't have to ask me twice. Why didn't they cauterize the rune? Oh, it was the other thing. So there's a scene where these guys are kind of like coming back together and discussing that there's, you know, an arm floating through the postal service.
Right.
And his wife is upstairs in bed trying to read. And I can only assume that he does not sleep in the same bed as his wife because she was like in a twin size bed.
Right.
Maybe a full.
Yeah.
That just seemed like, I don't know what she was waiting for, but, and then our main character, our main detective guy, he gets assaulted in the shower.
Right.
Which totally threw me off. there's a mad killer on the loose, hunting down these guys one person at a time and trying to kill them.
Yeah.
If the main guy who's responsible for all of this is in the shower and I have the opportunity to sneak up on him and kill him, why don't I do it?
Yeah, I think it was because he wanted to leave him to the end to make him cut off his own arm. I think that's why. Yeah, I think he wanted to say, but I don't. I think the only reason they had that scene was just to have something spooky, you know, it's a shower scene, basically.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it wouldn't. It's around the time of Psycho.
Yeah,
Psycho was in the 60s, wasn't it?
Yeah, but like 10 years before. It was only 10 years before. Yeah. So.
But yeah, I was still a little confused at the ending. Not like I couldn't follow it or I didn't understand it. Just confused that their idea of an ending was to physically present a character whom we've never been introduced to before.
Right.
You know, the guy that lost his arm, it was his son that we were told lives on the East Coast.
Yeah, right.
But now he's posing as his dad and he's got both of his arms.
Right.
But he's killing them only with one. So they all think it's his dad.
Yeah.
What a ruse.
Yeah. And that was obvious. You know, that yeah, I always like it when the killer does something so that the audience thinks it's the, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like he wouldn't do that. You know, if he's going to kill the guy, he's going to use both of his arms to kill him. But yeah. Because it's for the camera. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's tie one behind my back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, Madman Herman just takes the cake. Just the he in all realistic circumstances, if I was in that cave with those other five guys and one of them was Madman Herman, it would have taken one terrible pun joke out of his mouth. I would have been eating him like 10 seconds later. I don't even care if I could see daylight coming out of the hole. I would have eaten him first. I can't believe he plays a radio DJ in this film.
So, yeah, hilarious.
And great kill, too. You know, there's a trope that never gets overused. Oh, my God. Somebody called the radio station and threatened me. I better trace the call. Oh, my God. It's coming from inside the radio station.
Yeah. Well, this actually was one of the first instances of that happening. This was before.
Was it really?
When a stranger calls.
Groundbreaking.
And, yeah. Yeah. This is before all those. Is that it?
That's pretty much all I have to say.
I had the same note that wow, those beards grew fast. I think this would be great for riff tracks. I think they would do this really well. It would be so funny.
Yeah.
And the pacing was so slow. This movie, if they had edited this up, it might have been a little bit better, but or it certainly would have been, but of course, it's at 90 minutes. It feels like it's 3 hours long. Like it's only a 90-minute movie.
I completely agree with your glacial pace.
Yeah, glacial pacing. Let's see. And then I wrote the elevator scene was gripping with the dog and the old lady. But
oh yeah,
that was very strange. So anyway, yes, the severed arm. I'm glad we got to watch it because it would have been one of those moments of my childhood when I watched a horror movie and it really scared me. So it's nice to wipe that off and not worry about it ever scaring me again. So okay,
this is like therapy for you.
It is. It was like therapeutic. Yeah. Our next movie, this one, we're gonna go forward a year, and that is in 1974, Messiah of Evil. A young woman goes searching for her missing artist father. Her journey takes her to a strange Californian seaside town governed by a mysterious undead cult. This was directed by two people, actually a husband and wife team at the time. They got divorced later, but Willard Hayek, I think is his name, and Gloria Katz. Willard Hayek is known for writing Indiana. He was one of the writers of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. He also was a writer for American Graffiti. You could tell the George Lucas tie in there. And he wrote and directed Howard the Duck, Joe.
But he just keep on coming.
Yeah, he also wrote Radioland. Man, he did a lot of stuff. So, but this was a pretty well received movie and respected by a lot of filmmakers. And Gloria Katz, I think she actually wrote Lego Indiana Jones and Lego Indiana Jones 2, believe it or not. So, but she did a lot of the same movies as her husband, or her husband at the time. This is starring Michael Greer as Tom, Mariana Hill, Joy Bang is a great name of an actress. She's the girl that is with Tom, you know, the kind of hippie girl. Oh.
Yeah,
she gets killed in the movie theater. Yeah. Yeah, Anitra Ford, she played Laura, who got killed in a really cool scene in the grocery store. I liked that scene a lot. It was pretty crazy. Elisha Cook, you may have recognized him. Elisha Cook Jr. He's been in a lot of stuff. Character actor. He was in The Big Sleep, House on Haunted Hill, Rosemary's Baby, Maltese Falcon. He's been in a ton of stuff. Magnum PI, even. Alf, he was in Alf, Joe. So anyway, this one is Messiah of Evil.
You skipped over the one guy that I did recognize.
Who?
Charles Dierkop.
Dierkop.
He was the gas station attendant.
Yeah, I didn't recognize. What's he been in?
At the beginning. So one of my favorite movies of all time is The Sting.
Oh, yeah.
And, why can't I think of his? The character's name is Doyle Lonigan. Who's the mark and all this? It was who played Quint in Jaws?
Shit.
That guy.
God, why can't I remember his name? Robert Shaw.
Okay, Jesus. Shaw plays Doyle Lonigan.
Right, yeah.
Who's the mark of all of this.
Yeah, no, I remember
and this
the
is
Sting,
Doyle Lonigan's. Yeah. This is Doyle Lonigan's right-hand man.
Yeah, Floyd the Bodyguard.
Yeah, he's one that's like, I know I gave him 4 threes.
He also
trying to cheat him in poker.
He also played Killer Santa in Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I think I knew. Yeah, I think I knew that.
Yeah, I'm assuming
he
that's
was the only
Santa,
one I recognized.
That's the Santa at the beginning. Right. That kills the kid's parents or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, he's looks like he's been in a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. He has a very distinct look.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or nose,
yes.
I should say.
Yeah, he does. I thought the opening song was amazing. I love the art on the walls at the dad's house. I thought it was creepy. There's something very unusual about that whole thing. And
that is very cool.
Yeah. And a lot of in the background, it just looked like people were kind of hovering over the scene all the time. It was interesting. It felt like a David Lynch movie, which I was drawn to it. It had some dream logic. there was a scene where she says, or he says, "My zipper's stuck." What a great line.
I have the same note.
What a great line. Hey, my zipper's stuck. Can you help me with this?
My zipper is stuck pickup line.
Right, exactly. That's not a lot of creativity in that one.
You know what else is odd about that? The zipper in question, just for those people that haven't seen it, the zipper in question is his vest.
Right.
I've never seen a vest that zips down the side.
I know,
Don't all vests just have buttons that go along the front? There's like 3 or 4 of them.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
So that was really
That might have been a vest that was where the buttons were on the front were already pre-sewn or something. I don't know.
Yeah, this guy's clearly no Houdini because he can't get out of just a 4-button vest. So
you don't just unzip a man and say goodnight.
You certainly. That's just rude. It's like hanging up on somebody without saying goodbye.
Point Dune is that's actually I think in this they call it Point Dune, but in out here it obviously is very similar to it's Point Doom is out by Malibu. I thought the Ralph supermarket and the theater scenes were both really well done. I enjoyed those. But the rules of these zombie-like creatures are a little strange because they started eating each other, which I don't think I've seen that before, but I don't know. This is one that Many of the extras in this movie were unemployed NASA workers, actually. I don't know why. I have no idea why that's the case. But and actually, those paintings on the walls in the dad's home were done by Gloria Katz, the writer and co-director, her college roommate. Believe it or not. Believe it or not, Joe. Let's see. And I think at one time, oh yeah. So this was re-released in 1978, and they called it Return of the Living Dead. They advertised it with images in the ad taken from Night of the Living Dead, like the original Romero Night of the Living Dead, as well as Dawn of the Dead. And the tagline was, when there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth. George Romero sued the distributor, citing unfair competition, and won a restraining order in 1978, preventing the film from being shown under that title. Though sporadic engagements did occur in 1979 under that name. So they, back in those days, I guess you could get away with this stuff. Oh, the main character narrates the line. He says the line, no one will hear you scream, shortly after Walter Hill's appearance. And Walter Hill later produced Alien 1979, whose famous tagline was, in space, no one can hear you scream. So, Joe, what are your thoughts on this movie, on Messiah of Evil?
Hand to God, when the movie was starting, I had to pause it, because I thought maybe I had missed something and like the movie had started like 10 minutes in, but no, that's just how it started. It was odd. Nice product placement for Mobile One. Yes. And I, you know, any movie that starts off with a random gas station attendant blindly shooting a revolver into the forest at night without being able to see anything, you know, you're off to a good start.
Yeah. 100%.
One thing I'd like to point out is this woman goes into town to try to find her artist father. And the first place she stops at is at an art dealership. And the woman that runs the place, who is the art dealer, is blind. She cannot see.
Yeah.
What type of art dealer can't see the art?
Yeah. Can't see.
I don't know why that got written in that way. That made no sense to me. I do agree, though, that the grocery store scene and the movie theater scene were by far the best parts of this film. The only thing that was a little annoying on the grocery store scene was the terrible ADR, where you could overly hear the shoes clopping on the linoleum tile echoing through it. It was getting a little annoying after a while. But, you know, I think they really... The movie theater scene is the one that I was, I guess, disappointed in. It was neat. It was, you know, there's a girl just sitting there kind of like midway through the theater and she's just eating popcorn. And then one by one, you notice that there's more people coming in, filling in behind her. And then you find out these are all zombie type creatures out to get her. And they attack her as she runs up on stage right in front of the white projector movie screen. And the last thing you see is like her hand raising up in the air. I was thinking, as long as they're bringing people into this theater, it would have been cooler. I just think they missed an opportunity. If some of those zombies had started to appear behind the movie screen in silhouette. And because if you remember correctly, in the Dawn of the Dead remake, when they released that, I believe the cover art for those discs and some of the promotional material all just look like it was zombies clawing at you behind a movie screen. I thought that's where that came from, but like I said, I was disappointed. There's also a scene where, what is it? Arletty? Is that her name? The main character?
Yeah.
Anyway,
I think so. Yeah.
She's like at the sink. I don't know if she's brushing her teeth or something. She opens her mouth and there's a bug on her tongue.
Yeah.
That is so blatantly just a plastic prop.
Yeah.
That's just a toy they've sat on her. And then she spits it out in the sink. And then all of a sudden it's wandering all over the place along with like seven other bugs in that sink. It was really bizarre. And I did cut, again, another pet peeve. There's cops shooting their revolvers at the end of the film, and each one of them must have shot like 30 rounds in a revolver that holds six.
They did that old school shooting style where it's like they're like pushing the gun at, like they're,
yes, they're, you know, they're kind of throwing it or flicking the bullet at you. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Another thing I thought was weird, speaking of the cops, when they do finally find this girl's dad washed up on the shore, the detective goes over to Tom, who, you know, because he's the man of the two of them, and suggests that he might want to take her out of town for a few weeks. And I'm like, isn't that kind of like the wrong, like, shouldn't you stay here and maybe figure out what to do with your dad? I don't think he's going to keep for 2 weeks, but my only other, I think, laughable criticism was the color of the blood that they used, like dripping out of people's eyes, all looked like Tabasco sauce. So not really red, more like a bright orangish type thing, but all in all, I think the name of this movie, despite having to change it, is cooler than the movie itself. But I do like those two scenes. Like I said, the grocery store and the movie theater are both very cool scenes worth watching. So.
Excellent. And the cat took a shit again. This is
all right.
Oh God, it smells so bad.
It's a bonus episode.
Yeah, I'm kidding. Ugh.
We need to start putting asterisks by the episodes when your cat
where he took a shit.
Yeah.
It's been a while. He'd given me relief. Now look at him. You can see him on the video behind me. He's eating,
laughing his ass off.
Oh, it smells so bad right now.
He's got, you can't see this at home, but this cat has a clothespin on his nose and he's laughing hysterically.
I know. Yeah. No. Oh, it's terrible.
He's trying not to gag.
Whew. So last but not least, we're going to go back to 1971, backwards in time, to Jessica. I was barely alive. Let's scare Jessica to death. A recently institutionalized woman has bizarre experiences after moving into a supposedly haunted country farmhouse and fears she may be losing her sanity once again. This is directed by John D. Hancock. He directed John D. Hancock. He wanted to separate. He didn't want you to think that he was one of the founding fathers.
John Hancock. Yeah.
Right. And he directed Prancer. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
And he directed Prancer under the name John Hancock, Joe. He got rid of the D. He also directed some episodes of the,
I think part of Prancer was filmed at the Starved Rock State Park, if I remember. Hmm. Not too far away from where I grew up. Yeah.
He directed some episodes of the reboot of The Twilight Zone in the 80s and Hill Street Blues, among a bunch of other things that I haven't really heard of.
That would have been another good thing you could have played.
Yeah. Actually, Recalcum. He actually is one of the writers, and he wrote episodes of our Sanford and Son. So, yeah. And this is starring Zora Lampert, Barton Heyman, Kevin O'Connor, Gretchen Corbett, Alan Manson, and Mary Claire Costello. So Joe, what are your thoughts of Let's Scare Jessica to Death?
This is the movie I'm the most confused about. I don't really understand what I watched. This is one like I need someone to hold my hand and rewatch it. Matt, I have a question for you. Besides Indiana Jones, do you know of anybody that like does brass rubbings on tombstones?
No, except for this.
No.
Woman.
It's now I know two people, Indiana Jones and this woman. They're driving off. The first guy was her husband, correct? Her husband and just a friend of theirs, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So these three individuals are driving to their new found home, I guess, or their new acquired home, in a hearse. That's how they get from point A to point B, I guess. Gets good gas mileage, maybe. But they really
Back
like
in those
standing
days, it
out.
Didn't matter.
No. Gas was a nickel.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they have to stop along the way because they see a cemetery, and this girl's got to go run out with her paper and her crayons, and she has to do brass rubbings of these tombstones because she likes it and thinks it's fun. Then they arrive at their home, and there's somebody living there, a squatter that they find. They're awful chill about the fact that there's some woman living in there.
That's the 70s.
Who just blatantly says, oh yeah, I was just passing through. I thought it was abandoned, so I'm just going to leave now. And then they invite her to stay and have dinner and then spend the night. And then they offer to give her, it's just, these are very welcoming people. This is not Iowa. Yeah. I don't know where this took place. It's got to be out in California or something.
Yeah. I think it's upstate New York, maybe.
Okay. I can believe that too. You know, and then eventually this girl, this squatter, becomes part of their little commune, and they all start living together like on a permanent basis. It's just bizarre. I think the part I was the most confused about is when they finally do go into town. The town seems to be like people like my, like in their 80s, I would say. It's everybody's grandfather lives in this town. But they're bullies.
Yeah, they're old people bullies. Yeah,
they were like scuffing up the hearse, and the guy was trying to like open the door of the hearse to get back into the car and sit down and drive away. And as he's squatting down into the car, one of the neighborhood guys just like bops him on the head.
Yep.
I'm like, what the hell was that for? I want to turn around and slap the guy.
Yeah, no, they were dicks, these old people.
Yeah, not like normal, ornery old people.
Right.
Respect. These guys were just childish dicks. Anyway, Jessica, you know, who we built this movie around, she goes up into her attic and finds all these old timey dresses and photos and stuff. Lo and behold, nobody seemed to recognize the resemblance of the squatter to the woman who was in the old timey photo. I mean, I picked that out right away. I would have thought, I don't know what they're smoking, but that should have been a blatant giveaway right there. And I do want to point out for anybody that's been following us along for the past 5 years, there's a scene where this squatter girl who's dressed up in a bride's outfit or something starts coming out of the lake that, of course, all these people, they have no running water, so they shower and clean themselves. They bathe in the lake. But in that same said lake, this girl is coming up out of the water. She's emerging from it. I used that clip, that image, that screenshot of her coming out of the water for episode 49 when we were discussing aquatic horror.
Oh.
I just remember when she was coming out, I'm like, oh my God, I've seen that image somewhere. And I'm like, I've used that. And so I had to go back and look it up. So yeah, that was August 5th, 2022, episode 49, aquatic horror. So the other guy that was with them, his name is Woody, and they part of the reason they bought this house, mansion, whatever, is it's in an apple orchard, and that's how they were planning on earning their living, is they were going to try to get the apple orchard back up and running so they could sell apples. And the guy that's helping them, the guy that's with them, his name is Woody. Woody's job every day is to get on the tractor and drive around shooting pesticides or water or something out of the back of the tractor. I don't know what it was. But at the end of the film, Jessica is running out because she can hear the tractor going and assuming it's Woody, and she's running out looking to him for help, and he's already dead. I don't know who killed him or if he died before he got onto the tractor or after. And if he died before getting on the tractor, who started? I don't know. I was lost at that part. But this was my least favorite of the three.
And it's probably my favorite of the three. It's probably my favorite of the three.
My favorite was Messiah of Evil.
Yeah, this and the Messiah of Evil, I liked pretty closely. I thought the movie looks great. And actually, there was a pretty solid jump scare with that girl in the house. There were two basic jump scares, but one was pretty solid. The one where the girl came, you know, she's looking at the stairs And then the girl pops out of the doorway. Yeah. And I thought that was a pretty solid jump scare. It kind of startled me. I wasn't, for some reason, expecting a jump scare in this movie. Like, jump scares didn't really become that big of a deal until like Halloween kind of, and then after that, but like that was, you know, I wasn't expecting one. And there was another good jump scare in the lake too. I don't know if it was when she looks down and sees the girl under the water or what, but
oh, floating, I can't remember the water, now. Yeah. In the wedding dress. Yeah.
Yeah, the old a town of old guy thugs. Those guys just standing around like a couple of roving toughs, you know, standing there. They were acting like teenagers. The one guy was like scraping off the I guess they'd painted love or something like that in the doorway at the bottom, and he was scraping it off with the bottom of his shoe. And then they. I hate to break it to you, but the mole they found was a mouse. That's not a mole. Yes. It was very obviously a mouse. Yeah. I thought it was kind of eerie, kind of creepy. I thought the pacing of this was better than certainly the severed arm, for God's sake. But it was still, you know, for 90 minutes, it was still kind of slow paced. But I think that's just these movies back then. It's obviously sort of a vampire tale. And I'm not sure the cuts and everything. Maybe she doesn't have vampire teeth, and that's why. I'm not, but at other times she does kind of bite somebody. So I'm not sure. But this is one of Stephen King's favorite movies. The lake sequences, which I noticed as well, was shot in the autumn. So the characters, even though they were supposed to be running out, they wanted to go swimming, the water was super cold, and the character and the actors were freezing when they were shooting this. And I remember watching it thinking, they're out in the water right now, and those trees across the lake are all turning, you know, so there's no way this water can be, you know, comfortable for them. But let's see. Oh, yeah. And the house is in Connecticut. The setting for this was Connecticut. Old Saybrook, Connecticut. So it kind of had a nice. I thought the lake kind of had a feel that looked like Friday the 13th a little bit too. But I don't know. Any lake, I guess, with woods around it looks like Friday the 13th, especially in the early evening or whatever. So let me see there. I thought there was one more. Oh, yeah. And then that she goes running straight through the chemicals in the truck when at the end, when she thinks that, you know, the guy's driving the truck with the chemicals, she goes running right through it, you know, gets completely sprayed by those chemicals. Yeah. So, but yeah, overall, you know, I thought that I'm glad I watched it. This was another movie that I'd seen the cover for over and over. And I remember hearing about it. I always thought that the title sounded super creepy, you know, I don't know what the title has to do with anything though, because it's a cool title, but I always thought all along that, that Let's Scare Jessica to Death meant that it was going to be a group of people who were kind of gaslighting her. And so I always assumed that's what this story was, but it really wasn't like it, you know, her husband and her boyfriend, they both thought there was something weird in the town too, you know, and at various times thought there was something wrong with the girl, but it really isn't about gaslighting or trying to scare someone. I thought that's really what the ending was going to be. Even as I was watching it, I was thinking, is this going to be about them trying to drive her crazy? You know, but
yeah,
at any rate, that is Let's Scare Jessica to Death. So, Joe, what our next episode, what tell us about what our next episode is going to be.
Andrew Gascowiak is going to be joining us back again. You may have remembered we discussed his first written movie, Black Friday. Yes.
Right.
Black Friday with him. And he's come back in November. Yes. So he's come back because he's got another movie that just on June 6th comes out on digital. So you can buy it, rent it, download it anywhere. I guess digital movies are found, called Marshmallow.
Yep.
So we are going to be discussing that film, and he's going to come on the air and talk to us a little bit about it.
Yeah, I saw it a couple months ago. I talked about it a little bit. It's definitely worth checking out. So check
it. Corbin Burnson's in it, for God's sakes.
Yeah, what the hell? But yeah. It'll be available for rent this when this episode comes out on Friday.
Yeah, today.
So today, as this episode comes out, watch it. And then in 2 weeks, we will have an episode with Andy Griszkowiak, and we'll be talking about it then. So,
yeah.
All right. And so in the meantime, just be aware that the next few episodes will have recorded them all within the next week or so. So if there are some new horror movies coming out that we don't talk about between now and when we finally do record again, that's because that's not that we didn't watch them. We might post online about them, but in terms of the show, the next few episodes will all be recorded in the next week. So if anything comes out in late June or July, what?
But to you, the viewer, seamless.
Right. To you guys,
you seamless. Won't know any of this. Yeah.
All right. But, you know, they might, if a good movie comes out, they might be thinking, hey, I wonder if they saw it. But so we, you know, that's clear.
Rest assured, we probably have seen it, but we'll post about it on Facebook or something.
We'll have a long, what have you watched recently in August?
Oh, my God. We'll have like years to catch up with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's it for this week. We'll see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us.
They're coming. Get you, Barbara.
We've got a death curse.
There was a shark.
Little pig, let me come in.
Go a little mad sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
This is a ceaseless career.